Hey, welcome to the Toronto Today podcast. My name is Greg Brady, host of Toronto Today, which you can hear on the radio 5:30 to 9. But we put this podcast together for you to capture the day's highlights. Today, April 23rd, a lot of talk still about the police chief of Toronto, Myron Demkew, and his comments after the Umar Zamir not guilty verdict on Sunday. It was a trial of Zamir and a first-degree murder charge in the death of Detective Constable Jeffrey Northrup that has captivated the public's attention quite a bit. And Demkew's comments certainly didn't turn those temperatures down. We'll talk about it on Think Tank.
640 Toronto presents Think Tank. The breaking stories you care about. Facts and opinions that get you through the day. Now, let's meet the guests.
Let's do just that on a Tuesday morning. Welcome in our three people on the panel. Anne-Marie Akins is Media and Crisis Communications Advisor. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning.
Chloe Brown, Policy Analyst, former mayoral candidate. We love our chats on Tuesday with Chloe. Good morning.
Morning.
And here's Steve Paikin, the host of The Agenda at 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock. Sometimes I find the 11 o'clock version is more spicy than the 8 o'clock version.
You know, despite great inflation, I still think you're worth 100%.
Is that like in on TV those old days? Can you leave all the swear words in after 11? I feel like I don't know whether the Broadcast Standards Act factors in there. I have no idea.
Yeah, pretty sure it doesn't work that way.
I don't think it does either. I think it's spicy but clean. Let's put it that way. It's spicy and easy to digest. Robin Urbeck in the Globe and Mail. And everybody will have an opinion, and the world's full of hot takes, but this isn't one that I think is that. She, in essence, called for the Toronto Police Chief's resignation in Myron Demkew for the events over the weekend and especially the comments he made about the trial, in that he was disappointed with the verdict. I want you to hear the clip, and then I want to talk about that possibility and whether or not we could see this transpiring. Here's what he said on Sunday.
While we respect the judicial process and appreciate the work of everyone involved in this very difficult case, I share the feelings of our members who were hoping for a different outcome. Now, we will come together as a policing family during this difficult time. Every Toronto police officer should go home to their family at the end of each day after serving and protecting.
Now, I'm sure, Chloe Brown, I want to start with you. I'm sure there were calls for Mark Saunders' resignation in light of some issues around the Bruce MacArthur investigation and prosecution. But I don't think this is that. But I understand where Robin's coming from here. She says that statement should be disqualifying for someone with his job. And it's too ambiguous for me, in that you wanted a different outcome when the trial started or after all the evidence came in and a jury of his peers found him not guilty, you still wanted a different outcome. And we're on our third day. Chloe, I feel like that needs clarification, and the chief's nowhere to be found to give it.
I agree. The second half of his statement is what I would call an indoor thought, because ultimately the 12 jurors did their job, and even if you wanted a different outcome, that is something you should have kept privately to yourself. As a public official, the chief has a responsibility not only to his officers but also to the public, and I think this is a really great time for them to review their plainclothes protocol, because Mr. Zamir was proven to be in fear for his life, and unfortunately, because of the way management operates at that level, someone lost their life. And there's absolutely a need for the public to get clarity from the chief, because right now we're in a very prickly situation.
That's risky stuff, isn't it, Anne-Marie? I even referenced yesterday, then-President Joe Biden did something I didn't think he should have done post the murder of George Floyd, and that he weighed in on the Derek Chauvin trial, the officer that had his knee on Floyd's neck. And he said the day before the verdict, "I'm praying that the verdict is the right verdict." I just feel, if you're in politics, and I feel like if you're the police chief as well, you've got to leave justice alone, either in the process of that trial and certainly in the aftermath as well.
I completely agree. I think that we've gotten into the habit of accepting a certain degree of interference from our public officials in the justice system, because many people find it frustrating. It's pretty opaque, and it's often we don't know the reasons for things. Things are kept confidential, and so for we don't understand. But I think what they need to do is respect our justice system, especially the independence of it, whether it's appointing judges, talking about that, or whether it's the decisions made by our judiciary are really important to keep those independent. Whether or not he should resign over those comments, hard to say. But, you know, the community looks at our chief police as a leader in things. And if he doubts the justice system, it's just going to encourage the public to doubt it as well. And this cloud is going to keep hanging over this man for the remainder of his life.
Steve, Demkew made it a priority during his swearing-in ceremony. He said that there were three massive priorities he wanted to focus on. But number one, above them all, was improving trust in and within the Toronto Police Service. And you lived here a long time, seen a bunch of different chiefs, and you've seen that trust sort of, you know, things do happen in waves. I think it's an important time right now for the police and this leader of the police to be more transparent. Being a cop's a tough job. The job is to serve and protect, and there's a lot of good men and women that do it, but they have to be trusted by the public, and they have to also trust in the processes around them.
100% right, and honorable people will disagree on whether the chief ought to resign over these comments. Robin Urbeck is a very good columnist, and she's laid out the argument that she believes would result in the chief resigning. But here's the reality. There are some jobs in society where you don't have free speech rights. You can't say whatever you want, whenever you want, because you have a position of responsibility, and therefore there are some limitations on what you can say if you want to have those jobs. I've got one of those jobs. Mm-hmm. I can't say whatever I want, whenever I want, because I may have to conduct a discussion on television about it, and I have to be seen as an honest broker, and therefore can't be popping off with all sorts of opinions. The chief has one of those jobs as well, and he crossed the line in this case, and whether he should pay for it with his job, you know, we'll leave that up to others. But I think that's a principle that stands.
Yeah, I think we lay that out there, Chloe, and we say it's one thing, and we played the clips of Jeffrey Northup's widow Sunday, and I give her a lot of space to say what she feels. And I think it's okay if she says, this brings it all back. I'm overcome with emotion. I'm frustrated by the verdict. I wanted accountability. But the rules for the police chief of the city of Toronto are way different than a grieving widow. I think we'd agree.
Absolutely. And this is where the public has really just reached a tipping point with the way that management particularly operates, because I honestly believe that the public doesn't have a contentious relationship with officers. It's the management of them. Mm-hmm. It's EPA, and it's the variety of talking heads that really put their ego above the need of the public to feel secure, to feel that they can trust the law enforcement officers. So I would really love to see the police chief really get to the heart of the issue when it comes to this statement, because ultimately he has positioned the police to look like its own little gang that operates separately from the public service.
Chloe, drill down a little bit on that. Would you say, like when a case goes to SIU, sometimes we roll our eyes and say, is there going to be true accountability here? Is there really going to be peers investigating peers? But like you said, when somebody comes out for in a police car and they come to the scene of a crime or they come to help a family, there's an element of trust there. It's the process and sort of, you're saying, almost the administration of those rank and file officers that's the problem.
Absolutely, and this is goes into the second topic of the OPP reviewing the Toronto police conduct. If there needs to be a public inquiry into the plainclothes protocol that police use, it should be done openly. We as the public are the recipients of that action when plainclothes police make themselves embedded in our communities. And ultimately, it would keep us both safe if there was a better protocol, because ultimately, it's the police officers on the ground. It's not management. And we need to make sure that not only are civilians safe, but officers as well. So, yeah, it becomes one of those issues where management needs to open up its books and its protocols so that not only police officers see, but criminologists, social workers, anyone who's involved in law enforcement. And it's not just officers.
And Anne-Marie, this is a constant battle, I think, is that you'll hear all the time from good police officers, and they don't want to work with the bad ones. In fact, they want the bad ones out of the system. And I think we'd say that in any workplace. Teachers say it. Doctors and nurses say it. So why wouldn't a difficult job like police officer, why would you want to be paired with a partner you couldn't trust or someone you thought was unethical? This is going to be a fascinating scenario, as Chloe laid out, to see where this OPP review goes.
Yeah, it will be. And I think as much as officers say they don't want to work with the bad ones. They are very, you know, it is very, very tight community because of the nature of the work that they do. And they have, I think, a very difficult time believing that that anyone is a bad officer. And or they make excuses for bad decisions in the moment and excuse them as the officer itself is good. But I think one of the things, you know, to touch on what Steve said, that people like the police chief, the premier, the mayor, there are people that should not be questioning the decisions of the justice system. They can express in the moment, sometimes they do in the moment, feeling frustrated, and they say those words out loud, as Chloe said, those your indoor voice. but they should know better to apologize when that happens. So the chief would have been much better, and I think there wouldn't be calls for his resignation if he apologized that he spoke from emotion. That was a tragedy that happened that night, and he took it very personally, as all the officers did. And he could apologize. Former Mayor John Tory admitted that his words at when he was granted bail were inappropriate, and he said he's learned lessons. He would like more transparency from the justice system, but he at least apologized for it, and you got to give him props for that.
Steve, I want to get some with you about playing close police and ask you a question, but as Anne-Marie brings up, we've yet to hear from Doug Ford on the issue. I'm sure he'll be at an announcement that's unrelated, and I'm sure someone will ask him the question. Knowing Ford as you know him from news conferences, what do you think he says about it?
Well, I don't want to speculate on this because that'll only get me into trouble. And this is one of those.
That's what I'm trying to do here. You can tell.
Yeah. Well, no, you're quite right. The premier will have a press conference about something else. Somebody will ask him a question about this. And then he will probably, because he is very supportive of the police and has been for all of his time in public life, he'll probably say something. Oh, gosh, Greg, you're getting me in trouble here. He may say something that he shouldn't say. Let's remember, either we have faith in the jury trial system. There's only a dozen people who heard every second of this trial. The rest of us did not.
Yeah.
And they are the people who are, they heard all the evidence. They came to their conclusion. They did their jobs. You may not like the verdict, but again, we go back to the main point. That doesn't give you the right to pop off, particularly if you're in a position of trust in society with a job, with responsibilities. You just can't say whatever you want.
And plainclothes police, Steve, it's a sensitive subject, and it always has been. I was reading last night an NPR article about New York City and how they've just kind of gone in waves, depending on who the mayor is and depending how law and order the mayor is. If he's very law and order, there's more plainclothes police. If he's not, if he's more a David Dinkins than a Rudy Giuliani, there's fewer. But I get there's a lot of residents that complain for years that people not dressed in police uniforms are able to act a different way. When I watch that video, Steve, and follow that trial every day, I see a woman in jean shorts. I see a guy in a flowered shirt. No way, no how do I assume they're approaching me and I think they're police officers. But I get that sometimes you can't be in the uniform. It's a sensitive subject.
It is. You're absolutely right. But let's remember that the people who sat in that jury box are the ones that heard all the arguments, and they emerged from having heard all the arguments that there was reasonable doubt as to whether or not the family at the center of this understood that those plainclothes officers were legit or they had reason to fear that they weren't legit. That's what the jury decided, and I'm not sure any of us can second guess them because we didn't sit through every second of this trial. They did.
All right. Think Tank with Anne-Marie Akins, Chloe Brown, Steve Paikin. We're rolling it up to top of the hour here. I sent you three a story about Ontario colleges getting international student study permits. And there's this college and that college. We could play a game where I make up a college name and you're like, is that a real college or is it not? Yorkville University. I've never quite heard of that. But there's two campuses in Greater Toronto with 5,154 applications. And most of them are international students. But I want to get to a comment from NDP leader Mart Stiles on this. And Chloe, I'll start with you. I love talking the post-secondary world with you. She says fewer foreign students combined with insufficient funding from the provincial government, maybe that's an argument that's legit, will lead to cutbacks. Her question, how are they going to continue to meet the needs of the community as well as the province to produce the workers that they need to produce? But my goodness, I know you got to oppose things that Doug Ford and the Conservative Party do and have done and will do. But I think you got to go to Kitchener in London in some of these communities where 100 people are lining up outside a restaurant for two jobs, or 50 people outside a movie theater for one job. And rent has skyrocketed in places like Kitchener and Guelph, Chloe. I don't get backing the amount of international students that we had last year and saying, well, that was a good thing. Everybody did a great job here.
Absolutely. I was just at Union Station and I saw the, I can't even describe it, but there were so many international students with e-bikes trying to get onto the train.
Yeah.
And this is where, honestly, the NDP really frustrates me, because they should be advocating for better transit in small and medium-sized towns. Immigration to small and medium-sized towns has been an issue for decades because there's not enough infrastructure. These members of provincial parliament do an injustice to the north by not ensuring that there's infrastructure there so that they get the population they need to survive. So honestly, I need Merritt to figure out a better strategy, because we really need to talk about the north falling apart as a home for people. If we really want to make sure that these towns survive, it's about building transit. It's about building housing. It's about building ERs, because even in Minden right now, the ERs are closed. How do we expect people to make these towns thrive if they can't even get essential service?
And Marie, this is about giving internet. This is pro-international student, these policies. Having fewer of them means better opportunities for the ones that are legitimate, that want to come here to go to school for work and might want a part-time job. So everything, and again, there's great difference between what the provincial government and Jill Dunlop, the colleges and universities minister, plus at the time, Sean Fraser, the immigration minister, now Mark Miller, have done as well. But I don't get the comment. The concept of bringing international students here is not to provide cheap labor for companies. It's not.
No, I think there's lots of reasons for it. And I think Canada really does depend on our international students for a number of facets, that we just can't get the workers for all a variety of different fields, not low-paying ones necessarily either, IT, AI, web, transit building. There are people that we need to bring here in order to be able to fulfill all those jobs, but also the other jobs, the service-related industry jobs, because as much as people line up for jobs, we also hear that restaurants can't hire fast enough. They just yeah. aren't employees. And movie theaters, all of those service-related jobs, they just can't get the people enough people to participate in them. And I think many industries are still facing that. So I think the reason behind the restriction was really about housing and not being able to house everyone that lives here already. So that's what the restriction was about. So,
and Steve, your show is so Ontario focused. So you've heard the stories. You've heard the complaints from people in Kitchener, people in Guelph. Conestoga College had 30,000 international students at about $22,000 a pop. That's about $610 million. But not one of those dollars goes back into providing housing or shelter for any of those students. So this has all felt a little seedy. We're trying to correct it while not just closing the door, period.
Well, you've highlighted another example of how we seem to have a good chunk of our post-secondary system that is built on a house of cards. We have a system that is underfunded. Everybody says it. The province's own Blue Ribbon panel said it. And as a result, we have become overly dependent on foreign students in order to keep the system afloat. Then the federal government decides it wants to cut back on the number of foreign students coming, and everybody, surprise, surprise, is shocked that the rest of the system is falling apart. If you don't want to get to the foundation of the problem, if you just want to tinker away at the edges, I'm afraid nothing's going to happen. But it doesn't appear that anybody actually wants to deal with the foundation of the problem, and thus we are where we are. Does anybody, Greg, really expect us to get any better if we don't intend to improve the fiscal position of our post-secondary sector? I don't see how it could.
No, I suppose not. And then it gets back to, I guess I can end. I'll throw something that we didn't plan on, but just to raise tuition. Chloe, the average cost of an Ontario college tuition is still really affordable. It's just over $4,200. University lands at about $8,500, $9,000. And of course, affordable, like affordable housing, is a really relative term. But a tuition hike right now might be really rough on a lot of families. But to Steve's point, there isn't the money coming from anywhere else. They rely on governments and tax dollars to fund these institutions.
Absolutely. And this is where the colleges and universities in these small towns need to ask themselves, like, what is our regional economic development plan? Because ultimately, these small and medium-sized towns can't even keep the kids born there in those towns. They come to Toronto for the jobs. So this is really where, like, you need Grey County, Bruce, all of the counties above the GTA to figure out, like, what are we going to do together to make sure that we survive? Because ultimately, the international students here, they still have an opportunity to become employed. I would go as far to say that we don't even have a labor shortage. We have a shortage of good employers, because ultimately these are jobs that Canadians could be working, but the wages are, they're subpar. The benefits are subpar. And right now it's like, I see so many people leaving to Toronto to go to these small towns. They could be working with the expats. Are we called expats?
Yeah, I think so now.
They could be working with Torontonians and Canadians and the international students to be starting new industry in these towns that have an opportunity to change the industries that they were once involved in. So I'd love to see a whole of community approach to revitalizing.
Anne-Marie, last word to you. It's, we've had this tuition freeze in place for a long time for the province. We're going into it the sixth academic year with tuition frozen. It's been something that the Ford government's bragged about, but it sure has, as Chloe and Steve documented, it's had some unintended consequences. That's for certain.
Well, I think I'm not even sure I would call it unintended, because freezing the tuition is like saying to landlords, and they would never do this, that your rent is absolutely frozen. You cannot raise it. I don't care what's happening. You cannot raise it whatsoever. It's like telling other businesses they can't raise their prices. So you have to, but schools, they feel that they can interfere. So, but we all know the costs for everything have gone up. So they've gone up for the colleges and universities. So they're paralyzed to be able to raise the income that they need.
Out of time. Thanks so much. Great discussion. Appreciate all you guys coming on.
Have a good one.
There's Chloe Brown, Steve Paikin, Anne-Marie Aikens joining us on Think Tank. Hey, appreciate your time so much. Thanks for listening to Toronto Today podcast. And we're back live on the air 5:30 to 9. Hope to hear you then.